Maker Stories 3. So here's the deal. At the launch festival this year, Product Hunt had her own stage, and we interviewed about 30 people. This one with Anthony Soleil is one of my favorites. If you want to see more interviews, let me know and put them up. Anthony. What can I say about Anthony? Anthony manages Nas, but he also manages other artists like Future. He's managed Q-Tip. He also founded and runs Queensbridge Ventures, which co-invests with firms like YC, Andreessen Horowitz, SV Angel, and many others. Anthony started managing Nas at age 20, started investing with Troy Carter at age 23, and has now become a major player in both entertainment and tech. He gets people, he understands relationships, and he knows how to do business. And I worked with Ant at Queensbridge, so I can also say that he's just a good guy. All right, here's Ant.
How's it going, man?
Life's great. Yeah, it's good. It's good. I'm excited to be here. It's fucking beautiful.
It is.
It is beautiful. It takes a lot to get me out of Los Angeles.
Absolutely. So yeah. I got to tell just a brief story, just to intro the context of how we know each other. So I was at, everybody knows, the last company, Rapt FM.
Yeah.
You know, Nas' manager. The dream was to have Nas rapping on the site.
Was it Rap Genius who introduced us? I'm trying to remember.
It was actually, ironically, Adam Corey through 500.
Yeah, so that's crazy.
Anthony is an LP in 500. Adam was running investments at 500, investor relations. Ironically, Adam now runs investments with Anthony at Queensbridge. He connected us, and I told you about Rapt FM, and you listened very kindly and quickly came to the conclusion that it was not a business you wanted to invest in.
Yep.
Right. It was pretty clear. I asked you if I could use your name as an advisor to get other investors. You said yes. You continued to talk to me. One thing I did, which is I realized you didn't want to invest, that Nas wasn't going to rap on the platform, but I started to pass you other deals, other deals that you would invest in pretty quickly, like on the spot.
You know what's funny? I actually always thought what you thought about that. But, you know, like, honestly, I think you kind of saw that I believed in you as, like, a human being.
Yep.
Like, you don't have to, you know, always believe in an idea. Sometimes you just believe in a person and you support them. And then it becomes something.
Yeah.
So that's, I felt like just me engaging with you as much as I did would kind of show you what I thought about you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. And for me, it was just validation to keep passing you stuff. How could I add value to you so that you'd want to hang out with me and teach me, you know, teach me the ways of the music business, teach me how you think about investing. And, you know, it was almost a deal a day. You know, just so many. I was just looking for companies, even when mine wasn't doing well. And then in the transition between that and Product Hunt, just trying to work with you.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You were my spy at 500 startups. Yeah. It was really painful when you left, but it's cool.
But it's also funny to mention, I remember there's one story you're telling where we're at the Battery and we're talking and you're like, you just got to get in the game. And what Eric's done is he found a way to get in the game.
Yep.
And talk more about how the hell did you get in the game?
you know, it's interesting. Like a lot of times, you know, luck fucking matters. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to be a little lucky. So, like, luck kind of creates these small windows of opportunities for you to kind of, like, sneak in. But you got to make sure you turn around and kick the fucking door closed. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Or you're going to get fucking thrown out. And that's kind of, like, how I approach it. So how I got my start was I went to high school with a very talented artist. His name is Miguel, music singer. And he... And, you know, we grew up in a pretty not so good neighborhood. And I was like the least of the dummies. Like, we were all stupid, but I was the least stupid, if that makes any sense. And like, that kind of triggered, like, me feeling like I had to take an initiative to help us all get out of here. And that's kind of like what we did. So I ended up going to college, hustling, doing all that stuff. And then from there is how I met Nas. I used to, funny enough, somebody gave me a fucking joint packaged up, which is amazing. I used to like
at a tech conference.
Yeah, exactly. So I used to like run and go get like Nas's like weed and books, and he used to love to read and watch movies and shit. And then from there, it kind of turned into like me actually getting real responsibilities. And as I was building my management company, I went to work with Troy Carter at Atom Factory. Atom Factory was launched.
How did you, so, I mean, and sure, this is, Troy is one of the legends of the business. How did you win the trust over of Troy?
You know, Troy was, man, Troy was in an interesting, Troy's had an incredible career. Right. Like, started really young like I did, kind of went up and down, and then found, like, a great pocket for himself. Was always smarter than most in the room, right. Very tactical, and, like, he kind of just saw me in him. Or, you know what I'm saying? Right, like, yeah. Saw him and me, excuse me, and was just like, let's roll. And Troy's a gut guy, very similar to me. Like, he moves really quickly.
Right.
And when he started investing in technology is when we started to get into it.
And were you into, did he get you into technology or were you already in the
tech? I mean, I was like into it, but he got me into investing in tech.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's worth noting, I mean, Nas is, what, 10 years older, more? You know, significant.
Than me?
Yeah.
14 years, 13, 14?
14 years. Yeah. So when you became Nas' manager, how old were you?
Oh, man, I was young. I was like 20.
You were 20?
Yeah, I'm 28. Yeah, I was 20.
How did you win the trust over to handle all of Nas's, you know, Nas is one of the biggest rappers of all time?
You know, it's interesting. Like, when you're a veteran, you kind of, you get tired of the same old shit, so you just gamble. Like, some people are just, like, really good at, like, identifying kind of things, like, really early. He's almost like a really good seed investor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Angel investor.
Right.
So it's kind of like how he... By the way, he did the same thing with Steve Stout.
Really?
Steve Stout's one of the most, you know, one of the most accomplished music executives in the history of the business. And a great now, you know, handles accounts for Sprite, State Farm, McDonald's on the advertising side, was responsible for the Chris and Cliff Paul State Farm concept. But Nas found him at a young age with no experience. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, he's good at that.
And so how did you think about your Nas manager, we're going to Troy, how do you think about how to build the Nas brand? Because it's a brand that very easily could have been relegated to, like, the best underground or best hip-hop artist of all time. But you really built a big business around it and transcended just beyond the music, of course, which is the best of all time. But how did you think about that?
You know, in a lot of ways, everything starts with the music, right? But for Nas, he wanted to do... when we started investing in tech, it wasn't as sensationalized as it is now. It was a bit more, it was a lot more forward, not to say that it's not now. And for us, like, I took a meeting with a very high level executive in the distribution department at Universal Music Group, and my boy there showed me an email from like 2005 that this guy like passed on YouTube seed round. Uh-huh. The guy I was meeting with, like, YouTube, this is a joke, it'll never work, you know. And you know, one day I sat with Nas, I was like, yo, like, we're like, this is these people who can't look past, like, you know, 2 feet past them. Like, these are the people that we're, like, rubbing shoulders with every day. What are we getting from them? You're supposed to hang with people who, like, make you better, and they're making us worse. And when Troy used to, like, talk to me about tech and, like, who he was hanging with and what he was doing, I was like, you know, that's what we need to do. So Nas and I took it as, like, a way of, we basically paid to expand on our Rolodex. So that's kind of like, but in the beginning, we actually tried to do the sweat equity, you know, play. And no good founder gives sweat equity to a celebrity for some leverage. Like, to me, I think it makes you look really weak if you do that.
So talk more about this pay to play. How did you go about picking the first companies? How did you think about, I'm going to build a portfolio over a long period of time and I'm going to get in this game? The tech game.
Honestly, I just did it.
Did
what I thought that I liked. I was like, oh, this is cool. I like this. This is cool. I like this. We started getting more and more technical as time went on. Like, you know, we did a lot in Bitcoin, and we dibbled and dabbled in healthcare, but you know, for the most part, consumer things like Lyft or like The Fancy, things that you can easily kind of understand. Rap Genius,
right.
Something we can very easily understand, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we started.
And as an angel, right?
Yeah, and then as angels. And
you're
then
risking
as
your own
we,
money.
Huh?
So you're risking your own money.
Oh, we went for it. Let me tell you, you can't learn unless you put some of your shit on the line. Like, you know, to me, I could have never survived. I could have never raised a fund or, like, looked a dude in his eyes and say, give me this X amount of dollars. I'm going to fucking go kill it for you without feeling like that feeling of, oh, shit, I just doubled down on this. And if I lose it, I'm fucked. Like, you have to feel that, in my opinion, to be a really good investor.
And was there ever a point where you thought, I'm losing, fuck this tech shit, I'm out?
It's too early to tell. I'm sure I'll get there at some point.
It's 5 years.
Yeah, it's true.
You've just had some good bets.
So far, I've been incredibly lucky. I've been a lot of really good people, not even on some like entertainment, like dick riding shit. Like a lot of good people have been really good to us, like just helping us because we're students of it. Like we respect the craft of an investor the same way anyone would respect my craft as a manager. So we take it very seriously. So when like someone passes me a deal, I want to understand why they're doing it. Like what are they seeing that I'm not? I have questions for them. I have questions for the founders because I want to understand everyone's process. Because, you know, how I've always learned, you know, obviously life experience is one thing, but you kind of, you know, you collect a lot of people's thoughts throughout your life, your family, your friends, or this or that, and you kind of let it just kind of circulate in your head, and that becomes kind of who you are.
Right.
So that's the same way I digest other investors' processes.
And what are the biggest mistakes you see founders make, or what can you tell founders who are looking to approach you, looking to approach Nas, and work with you in any capacity?
Honestly, I think arrogance is like at an all-time high these days. People very rarely tell me no, and people, you know, but there are people who tell me no, and I think like for us, we're pretty good at like passing on deals. Like we'll say, hey, we're not in, or hey, we're in. I kind of think founders sometimes when they have a hot hand and everyone, there's so much inbound interest, they do a really bad job of managing the process.
Right.
And you have to understand something. Just because your seed round's hot doesn't mean your A is going to be hot. And just because your A is hot doesn't mean your B is going to be hot. And you got to kind of find a way to, you know, to politically kind of deal with that because you don't know when you're going to need someone again. The other thing, too, is, you know, people are spinning out and leaving to start their own funds and things like that. You don't know who at a firm you're going to, like, rub the wrong way and may need one day. And this may not be your first – this may not be your only company. You may have two or three startups. So I think founders have to – and the excuse I hate the most is I hate when founders tell me, you know, like, I need to stop fundraising so I can focus on my business. Fundraising is part of your fucking business. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yo, what the fuck are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So it's like, so to me, you got to do a better job of managing that process.
So what should they be saying?
As far as what?
Instead of fundraising, you know, I'm heads down right now. How should they manage that process? Should they just say you're in or you're not in? Should they, you know, be more clear?
Yeah. What they should do is obviously be transparent. You know, they have to. You know, you have to, there has to be two deadlines in your head, the real one and then the one you tell investors. But you have to be incredibly clear throughout the whole process so no one's being rubbed the wrong way. I had a company one time, you know, say, hey, we're going to get back to you when we're ready to close. And then would hit me up and said, hey, we're closing tomorrow, like 2 months later. And I'm like, yo, dude, like, that's not even, you know what I'm saying? Like, so like create a timeline for yourself. Let all inbounding interests understand that, or once you've selected your investors, you know, let them understand what the timeline is and kind of like, you know, walk it through.
Chameleonaire being an EIR now, Carmelo starting a fund, Kobe's gonna start a fund. Everyone, you know, you guys get kind of the first, if not the first, to get into it from the entertainment side. Everyone's doing it now. What do you think about that? What does everyone think about that 5 years out from now, 10 years out from now?
You know, it's funny because the music business is incredibly competitive. Now, I'm not saying tech isn't competitive, but there's a lot more collaboration, you know?
Yep.
Like, for example, two artists wouldn't sign a new artist together, but two firms would lead a round together, right?
Yep.
So it's interesting to see how that dynamic translates from entertainment to tech. With us, we're kind of cool, but a lot of how I operate is a direct reflection of Nas. Nas is a very easygoing guy, nice guy, respectful, wants everybody to win, cool. It's interesting to see what that competitiveness, what that turns people into as it kind of crosses over into technology. Personally, obviously really good friends with a lot of the folks in entertainment,
right.
Done deals with all of them. I think it just strengthens our position in a lot of ways because we can all come and do deals together and,
yep.
and use our leverage to kind of take it to the next level. And the thing that I love most about entertainers jumping into tech is I've been telling people for the last 5 years, you can't just show up to the front door of a company and say, give me 5% and I'll tweet about it and Facebook about it. To me, that's fucking disrespectful. You know what I'm saying? Like, the same way a musician like cares about their craft, that's how founders care about their company. And I like the fact that other people are recognizing that they have to, you know, they have to put down their own money to kind of get in the game.
Now, Nas, obviously, you know, the biggest artist you work with, but you work with other artists too.
Yeah.
You just signed Future recently.
Yeah, so I've been with Future for 7-8 months now. I'm kind of in this weird place where I obviously have the ability to grow my business, but I really enjoy investing.
Right.
So I'm trying to create that balance between both.
And art, you know, let's just say Future as an example. You took him on 8 months ago. How are you talking to him or other artists that you work with about building their kind of career outside of not just in music?
So Future is interesting. Future just wants to make strip club music right now. He ain't get it out of his system yet. But he'll get there.
Got it. Well, how about a new artist you take on who asks for your advice? He's a superstar artist. How do you make money in music today that's not just music?
So to me, if it's a new artist, it's only music.
Got it.
There has to be a foundation for who you are as a person. Like, I don't work with musicians who want to be business people first.
Got it.
I work with musicians who want to be artists first.
Okay, so let's take an example. We just had G-Eazy on stage. He's blowing up. He's got a lot of buzz. Let's just say you were managing hypothetically. He's super open-minded to doing things beyond music, but he's music first and foremost. How are you thinking about the arc of his career?
Well, he's a relatively new artist.
Got it.
The one thing about G-Eazy that I will say is he built his base on tech tools, right? So I think if there are tools around, if there are tools that can help his music, I would put him into those type of things. But for him, to look at it the way Nas does or the way Ashton does or the way, you know, or the way Mello does, in my opinion, I think it's just too early.
Got it. So let's take a better example. Childish Gambino.
Yeah.
If you're his manager, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, shit, that guy's fucking talented.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, he has enough on his plate. He's acting, he's a comedian, he's an artist. Someone told me recently he was thinking about not being an artist anymore. I hope that's not true. I think he focuses on his craft. And if there are deals that naturally, you know, kind of like come to him, then he does them. The thing with young artists is that, listen, there are a lot of major artists. I can name a few, like DMX, Nelly, Ja Rule, guys who are larger than life who don't exist anymore. Like, to me, I think the way to really create staying power is to hone your craft, own it, drive it down, like double, triple, quadruple down, create a base that won't break, and then, like, you know, throw on the suit and kind of go do some shit.
And you think they just pre-optimized, or they went to, you know, they didn't double down on their craft, or what do you think those examples, for example, don't have?
Yeah, I mean, yes, you when you're chasing, when you're see, I think the reason why guys like Snoop and Nas like are still around is because it was never seen to that they were ever like chasing money. Right. You know what I'm saying? It kind of just happened for them. And I think that's how musicians, you know, ease into the role of being a businessman. You know, they focus on the craft, they allow their craft to develop, and they allow business opportunities to naturally come to them.
If you could manage any hip hop artists right now outside of kind of the obvious Jay and Kanye, and but who's maybe a star, maybe someone like Chance the Rapper, up and coming, super exciting, who would it be?
So it has to be a rapper?
Pick one rapper, and you could also pick one non-rapper too if you want.
All right. Selfishly, I really want to manage Florence and the Machine. Oh, I'm a huge God. Florence Welch fan.
She's amazing.
She's the shit, yeah.
Can you make that happen?
No, I wish. Okay. Rapper. What rapper do I really, really love? It's a tough one. I mean, I have a soft spot for J. Cole. I love him. Like, yeah. I always have. I think he's going to be around forever. I don't know what I would do with him on the business side because he's such a pure artist. But watching him kind of like grow, I've known him for a while, it's been really dope.
Absolutely. And one thing also worth noting about, you're so like down low. You're like the person who's doing the most shit that the least amount of people know about. And I mean, your Twitter handle is dudebro with a zero. You keep it so humble around all these larger than life characters. In person, you're obviously, you're such a big personality. Why have you kept such a public profile that's low, and do you think that's going to change over time?
Great question. So I always tell my artists, I'm not the star. And that's how I prove to them. I think a lot of executives get really caught up in trying to be the star, and I think it derails, you know, a lot of their progress and impedes on a lot of what they could be doing to change, you know, their artist's career. Because what ends up happening is your ego actually starts, like, coming into play when you're, like, negotiating on behalf of your artist or when you're speaking to your artist. So I take the total opposite approach. I fully focus on business. I only care about the well-being of my clients and obviously my family and friends. And that's it. I treat this shit like, you know, like a plumber treats his job. Go home, fucking do what I do, come back, fucking turn on TV, watch some, like, you know, Law and Order SVU, some shit like that, basketball, football. And that's it. I hang out with my family. I've had the same friends for 20 fucking years. Like, that's how I roll. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I feel like I don't see it changing because, like, I think that's how people go crazy.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't do drugs. I don't have any weird addictions. Like, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I have a lot of realness around me as far as, like, my everyday process.
And also worth noting, I mean, you have the management side, you have the investing, but you're also involved in other endeavors too. Can you talk about the magazine, the fashion stuff?
Yeah. So we relaunched Mass Appeal as a full media company and a record company, which we're incredibly excited about. I also do corporate development at C3. They own and operate Lollapalooza and Austin City Limits, along with Counterpoint and Blues Fest and a few other festivals. I'm involved in a lot of different things, but at the end of the day, music is my first passion. And you know, I feel like I'll always be in the game. Somehow.
Is there something that you want to be doing on a high level eventually that you're not already doing?
You know, this is going to sound really weird, but I always wanted to be a math teacher.
Wow.
I don't know for what grade or something, but like just for like. So I have a degree in mathematics, and I know it sounds kind of crazy because I'm like hanging around with like rappers and shit, but I actually know a little bit about something. And I want to teach kids math. Like, I want to teach kids in my old neighborhood math. That's like what I always wanted to do.
That's
weirdly.
Amazing.
Like, I don't know if it's elementary or if it's middle, wherever, like, where. whatever the, maybe it's middle school, because I feel like middle school is like the breaking point for kids. Like if they get out of there alive, like they're all right, mm-hmm. right?
You should have in the future a program with you and Nas, you know, giving back in terms of encouraging STEM and math in schools.
Yeah, I mean, well,
I know you're doing something, right?
Well, we were investors in General Assembly a while back, and which we're pumped about. We're also investors in this education program called KORU, which is much higher level.
Yeah.
But you know, for us, we're just trying to build our chops. So we're in a position to really make an impact when we help kids. Like, we do things here and there, like, and not a lot of it is publicized, but we don't feel like we've arrived when it comes to that. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, Nas is really strategic about it. You know what I'm saying? He wants to, he's very calculated about how he helps people.
Right. I think he wants to make sure he doesn't dilute his brand and make sure he not spread himself too thin. Yeah. And as you're making this calculus about whether I spend more time with managing artists or investing or even other ventures, is it part of it that just the music industry isn't what it once what was? Are you optimistic about music?
No. The record business is suffering. The music business is on fucking fire.
Got it.
Yeah. I mean, artists never made this much money on the road. You know, like... it's easier to tour now because there's so many soft ticket plays like festivals and like, you know, artists are starting to come together and do bigger tours together. People are a lot more strategic about it. People are taking it more serious. Yes, you know, records aren't selling, but you know what? It's easier. It's like, what's the goal? Is the goal to sell as many records as possible, or is the goal for everyone in the world to hear what you're doing? Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially as a manager, I don't care about record sales. I care more about, like, has everyone heard our shit, even if they've downloaded it for free? Because that's going to turn into us having more of a social influence on people, us being more attractive to brands, us being able to sell more tickets, sell more merchandise. I look at the music business as a whole as I'm a very glass half full guy.
Right.
And especially with the music business, I'm for it all the way.
We're going to go in a sec, but a couple last questions. Do you ever see yourself not in the background? You know, manager, you're 28, there's a lot of time, but manager's inherently kind of a number two. When the number one is so big, obviously it's great, but do you ever see yourself kind of changing your, or, you know, having a public presence or being the, how do you feel about that question?
I would only do it if there was like a social aspect to it, but I don't have any aspirations to like need security or something.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
how do you judge your success?
So tell you guys a funny story. So, and I swear to God, I'm not saying this to brag, but I recently made that Forbes 30 under 30 right. list. And like my mom thought
can we give it up for Anthony making Forbes 30 under 30?
No, but wait, it's very important.
Okay.
My mom, I swear to God, she thought I sold drugs, literally. Like, and I sent it to her. I was like, see? And she's like, okay, I don't believe you sell drugs anymore. So that, to me, that's like success. So, it's, you know, I care a lot about what my family thinks about me. It's really important to me.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I do just want to say, in my, you know, last year and a half, you've been so incredibly supportive and have learned a lot from watching you and learned a lot from talking to you and very appreciative.
I mean, I only came for you.
and it's a true honor to have you on here. Everybody, please give it a round of applause to Anthony, and thank you for listening.